The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A hospital, along with Pennsylvania Department of Health and others, Commissioner Yoder was there and made announcement that there was two individuals who died. I think the terminology was measles associated or something like that, deaths. But the underlying assertion in that was that they died from measles. That certainly was what was communicated in the press. We had many inquiries from the press. There was much interest locally and nationally, and also from members of the public, our constituents. So now, under the law, anyone who dies of a communicable disease in Lancaster County, that means measles in this case, that would have to be reported to the coroner's office. And I had spoke at length yesterday with a senior member of the coroner's staff and spoke at length this morning with the coroner himself. And they have zero cases of measles death. They have one patient, and the coroner spoke about this in the press, but they had one patient who died with measles, not of measles.
Years, you have been one of the leading voices questioning the efficacy of vaccines. Do you accept some responsibility for this measles outbreak?
Absolutely not. First of all, this is an international outbreak. So, and we're doing better at handling it than any country in the world. Mexico has 15 times the amount of measles per capita that we have. Canada has four times the amount of measles. England has two times the amount of measles. Did I cause those measles outbreaks?
You're the most famous.
Did I cause 137,000 cases?
You're the most famous vaccine skeptic on the planet.
You know, what I've seen recently is, you know, every time there is a measles death, they want to lay it at Bobby Kennedy's feet and just say, see,
exactly.
Look at what you're doing. And that seems to be
exactly.
The playbook I notice.
Right. And so this was exactly the playbook. Thank you for saying that. There are allegedly two measles deaths. Unfortunately, the coroner and all the public health officials have no such deaths recorded. There's rumors about them being 80-year-olds getting measles and dying with measles. Then there's a story about a brand newborn with measles. It's all screwed up. The bottom line is, has nothing to do with vaccine management. Nothing whatsoever. And in fact, the measles death rate has been rather low in this country. Every time a little cluster develops, they make a meal out of it. And I've sort of watched these data. I mean, it may be a little higher than normal, but it's not the highest it's been in a long time by any means.
Ready for more lockdowns? The media will go hysteric over anything. If we're honest about them, they loved COVID. It was a ratings bonanza. They loved lockdowns. They love anything that will make the Trump supporter look uneducated. And now they don't have the measles vaccine. So any story they can find to smear somebody, even if you're taking advantage of a mother who just lost her newborn, well, you need to be a national story. No comment, though, on unrestrained immigration. No comment on the other causes of these things. The radical left, they love creating hysteria. They loved COVID. And now, the past few weeks, it's been measles. And you'd think, when you watch some of these news reports or read some of these articles, that this is just sweeping the nation. And then a lot of people will post, well, just put this in perspective a little bit. I mean, this is nothing. It's nothing compared to overdose death. It's nothing compared to all these other very easily preventable deaths. There was one girl on CNN, she was arguing about, well, we have murders that are committed by illegal aliens. And the other host basically says, well, how can you stop murder? Murder's gonna happen. It's not the illegal aliens' fault. And she just says, Well, these ones are preventable very easily if we just enforce immigration rules, because then the murderer isn't in the country. You look at just half this country, more than half, and the arguments, the debates that you have, the back and forth, I mean, it's, as we say on this show, it's just this level of will worship. The case in Pennsylvania, there are these two measles deaths, and the governor of Pennsylvania comes out right away, got to have a press conference immediately, just like when somebody died with COVID, and basically announces to the world, we've had two measles deaths, it's impacting this community. We need, I guess, lockdowns, forced vaccinations, I don't know what. There's no details about the deaths given, about the individuals, just all they said was measles-related deaths. Didn't give the age, but of course, we can't know any of those details, but of course we can know the vaccine status of the individuals, and they were both unvaccinated. So there's all the hysteria. A few days later, we learn by just asking the regular questions that are left out of all of the news reporting, well, why aren't you saying this? Oh, okay. So it was an infant that died from a totally unrelated cause, died with measles, actually died before they would have even been given the scheduled measles vaccine. So it's back to this hysteria, as Mr. Stephen Fleury's covered on this show. I mean, they just worship this industry. And you look at the way people get so riled up and worked up over this and then ignore many of these other stories. You look at the Lindsey Clancy trial. I mean, there's just more details coming out about that. It's horrific. It's sickening what happened there. The police report from the dad who came home and found his wife half dead because she attempted to kill herself, and then finds his three babies dead in the basement. I mean, you can't sleep reading that stuff. It's disturbing. And yet you've got half, I don't know, I don't want to say half, a good chunk of the country running to her defense. Spencer Pratt, Mr. Hilliker showed us this video of Pratt. He basically went through all these details and explains it was pretty hopeless, like the direction our country is heading in. I don't know how we get out of this. There is hope. There are answers. You'll find them at our website. You'll find them in our literature. You'll find them on this program, How to Live. I mean, you go to that Lindsey Clancy trial and the defense is, I mean, she admitted that she heard voices, but then the defense essentially comes down to this drug, this drug, this drug. She had a psychotic meltdown and wasn't totally in control of herself, despite how premeditated it was, despite the total lack of remorse. But let's just entertain the drug-related argument. Why, at that point, can we not say, we've got a huge problem in this country where people are prescribed drugs where the side effects, and they're read out loud on the TV for all of us to hear, say, may cause depression, may cause thoughts of suicide. Are they ever held accountable for the amount of mind-altering, not street drugs, prescribed medication? That why can't the lawyer say, we've got to go after these drug companies? I mean, that's getting down the line further. I mean, we just have so many problems. Well, the drugs are, we have to have the drugs so they can deal with this problem, and the drug company has to make this much money, and they're sealed off from ever being sued or held accountable for anything because they warned you of what the side effects could be. And there's just breakdown at every level. And it's like Mr. Armstrong said, I mean, it gets back down to the family structure. That's the core of a strong society. And when that's broken, you're going to get a broken nation. And so many people just don't know how to live, don't know why they exist, don't know what their purpose is. And it's so hard for society to admit, you know, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing. Where do we turn for the answers? Where do we go to get help? How do we learn how to live? Again, we've got the answers for you. It's packed in the literature, and that literature points you to the Bible. You look at, again, that Lindsey Clancy trial. You look at the things, just the hysterics that people get up over when it comes to this measles thing. There's a clip that's on social media. Basically, it goes back to the 1960s, and it's this Brady Bunch episode where the kid gets measles, and he stays home and he quarantines. And I'm not saying don't take an illness or a sickness seriously. Obviously, take precaution. You want to get healthy. You don't want to be sick. But then you look at, as this person posted, there's a Law and Order episode, and you'd think an unvaccinated person is like a serial killer. Meanwhile, you've got all these other crimes going on. You've got this mother murdering her children, and she's practically held up as a hero by a lot of other mothers who are posting videos on social media of the thoughts of harm that they want to commit against their babies because they don't know how to get them to stop crying or something. And the dad's not around. I mean, it's sickening. And Spencer Pratt says, I don't know how we fix this. God has answers. There is hope. But again, it takes a level of humility, a lot of humility, to just get to that point where you say, I don't know what I'm doing. Society, we don't know what we're doing. And yet people, they're so confident. It has to be this. It has to be this. If you don't do it, if you're not jabbed, if you're not vaccinated, you're a murderer. Listen to this. Again, it's kind of laughable, but just the contrast between the reaction to measles in the 60s and then the Law and Order episode in the 2000s. This is clip 5.
Boy, this is the life, isn't it?
Yeah. If you have to get sick, you sure can't beat the measles.
That's right. No medicine.
Inside or out. Like shots, I mean.
Don't even mention shots. Yeah.
Measles. Well, all the kids have now had the measles.
So have I.
Well, I had them years ago. Looks like the Bradys are finished with the measles.
Hold it.
You're not through yet.
Alice, don't tell me you're coming down with the measles.
Oh, I hope so. I'd hate to think I was just learning how to blush at my age.
Alice.
How do you feel?
I'm fine.
Dad says I should go to school.
7 students confirmed with measles, 4 others possible.
How? They had to have been vaccinated.
These moms never vaccinated their kids and lied about it.
Vaccines are harmful.
You are endangering the health of every child in this city.
Liv, no, it's turning blue.
Call 911.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Washington Post, the CDC hasn't added 2 deaths to its measles database. Here's why. I mean, like I said, just even the perspective on the amount. The Atlantic, the measles-stricken mother who lost her newborn son. Independent, Pennsylvania doctors blast the Trump administration over measles deaths controversy. I've lost trust in the CDC. Not from COVID, but because we're just trying to be a little bit more cautious about saying COVID-related or died with COVID or died with measles versus died from COVID or died from measles. It's hard, no lessons learned from COVID, I guess is one point you can make. One doctor posted a chart about measles-related deaths in the United States and basically how that number was trending down on this chart, and then it's basically near zero, and then that's when the measles vaccine actually comes out. I mean, there's all sorts of other things. Just following God's health laws, following basic laws of health, you know, help avoid a lot of these diseases. And people, they'll just weaponize any story. And the experts, they make a lot of money. The pharmaceutical industry makes a lot of money. I mean, they craft everything just perfectly for themselves to sell a product. They'll make a problem and provide the solution, no problem. I mean, again, it's man's world, and it's the way of get, and it's greed. And they'll sell out their fellow citizens, so that they can make money. The incentive is not get healthy because, well, there's no money to be made in people getting healthy, encouraging them to eat the right food, to get outside and get sunshine and fresh air. Everything's got to be monetized. This next story I want to get into a bit is just some updates on the rise of Germany. These stories that seem distant, as we cover on this show, these are stories that Mr. Fleury said we need to watch. Keep your eyes on Germany. There's a great article on the front page of the Trumpet right now by Mr. Palmer. And he's talking about Germany is about to explode. This article, the European Council on Foreign Relations, it's incredible what people are writing and how much it lines up with what Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Fleury have been saying for 80, 90, close to 100 years. If you go back to Mr. Armstrong in the 1920s, this article at the European Council on Foreign Relations, they're a think tank. It's titled, actually, maybe, How German Angst Could Become Europe's Nightmare. Germany's political center is crumbling, but its leaders appear unable to get ahead of the impending crisis. For decades, Germany was Europe's byword for political stability and predictability. Today, it is hard to overstate how little is now unthinkable in German politics. All bets are off. Decision makers elsewhere in Europe should get ready for the possibility of a new kind of Germany, no longer boring, no longer stable, and no longer rich. Again, this is a message that we've warned about for decades. We had this interview with Nicholas Frank back in 2017. And the questions that Mr. McDonald asked, a Trumpet writer, a Trumpet columnist, I mean, these are questions that only the Trumpet would ask because we're informed by Bible prophecy. And he asked him about, well, what is the fear here with Germany? You know, they seem prosperous, everything seems fine. But you look at the historical track record, and then here's how Nicholas Frank answered that question, again, nearly 10 years ago. This is clip one.
Not always. As long as they are well fed and have their income and have their life, they are very satisfied with someone like Mrs. Merkel.
Right. But if you take away the stability, they'll search for...
Then we will show our other face, right. I'm sure of. If the stability is breaking down, it has, I would say, 5-6 years, then our society would really change in a way. I would say, but that's my personal opinion. It would go in the same direction which we had experienced during the Nazi time.
Then we will show our other face. This article at the European Council. Germany is days away from elections in three eastern states. He talks about how the CDU is in this really tough spot. They're losing popularity. And then the coalition party that the CDU would like to work with is on the cusp of not even qualifying to be in these elections. So it would mean if they want to create a coalition, they've got to work with these even farther left-wing parties, which doesn't make them any more popular. But that might not even be a problem because what they're saying is the AfD could win over 50% and just have an outright majority in these states in Germany. These traditional parties, they're running out of options. This article says the strength of the AfD is a symptom, not a cause. It did not rise to prominence overnight and has been part of Germany's political landscape now for more than a decade. But the party is now within striking distance of actual political power at a time when the country's political and economic foundations are starting to crumble. It's a message that we have been warning about for a long time in the November-December 2017 Trumpet magazine. It's a picture of the Reichstag, and there's an earthquake going on underneath. And Mr. Fleury is warning about this. If there's weak coalitions or when the Germans are getting desperate, watch for a strong man. I remember that year when Mr. McDonald interviewed Nicholas Frank. He actually, there was a Trumpet magazine on a table in the front lobby area of Edstone, and Mr. Frank was reading it, and he said, "You think this German strongman is going to be here in a year?" I said, "It could be in a year. Could be in a few more years." But you live with that urgency of it's going to happen. And when it happens, you're not going to argue about, well, you were wrong in 2017 that it didn't happen at this point. We're going through in one of the classes here looking at these prophecies in the book of Habakkuk. And you've got the Holy Roman Empire mentioned in there. You've got God's church. You've got this warring church against or this spiritual uprising within the church. There's it's about the new throne and the new stone. And Habakkuk 2 verse 3 says, "For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry." In the Habakkuk booklet, Mr. Fleury says, "Be patient and wait. This prophecy will be totally fulfilled." This is in the context of the court case. "It will not lie. God is filling in the details as never before in this end time. We are going to be left without excuse." You look at these events in Germany, and it's just as Mr. Armstrong described. That financial crisis that brings Europe together. God is filling in the details as never before in this end time. We are going to be left without excuse. And for the second half of today's program, I want to play a Key of David from Mr. Gerald Fleury, given back in 2021. It's titled, "At the End It Shall Speak." And he talks about this verse. He talks about waiting on God and what you do, watching and praying, making the changes, seeing these events, being warned about them, and how you react. This article, again from the European Council, "Why should the rest of Europe now worry so much about Germany's malaise? The answer is because a German crisis is a European crisis. Germany is too economically and politically important to fail. Its economic weight, role at the heart of the EU and position as Europe's most populous member state mean this would be more than just another episode of national political turbulence. A Germany that is oozing 15,000 industrial jobs each month, becoming even more dependent on technology imports, and increasingly incapable of internal reform, risks dragging Europe towards fragmentation and exploitation." We play this classic clip from Mr. Armstrong often. Germany is the beating heart of Europe. This is clip 7.
"And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany."
Incredible. Then there are the clips where he talks about a financial crisis triggering these things. Again, it's that warning message has been there for decades and decades. European Council, unless political leaders come up with something new, a German poll will blot all major items on the EU's agenda. Again, all eyes are on Germany. Just like Mr. Fleury said right after President Trump won the election in 2024, German leadership is not optional, Sweden's defense minister said at a public event this month attended by one of the authors. German political elites seem to disagree. Theirs is the third largest economy in the world, sitting at the core of the world's largest single market, boasting leading international companies and building up one of the largest defense budgets anywhere. Yet they appear to lack any sense of their own domestic, let alone global, agency. You see how there's this yearning for a strongman that can break through a weak coalition, that can break through, that can solve all of their problems. There's these crises happening in Germany. And then in the meantime, they're working with Israel. They're buying up missile programs or missile systems, defense systems from Israel, another prophesied trend that we've spoken about for decades. And they're test launching ballistic missiles. Here's a clip about that story from Deutsche Welle. This is clip two.
This is Germany testing an Israeli ballistic missile, a test so sensitive that it was kept secret until the very last moment. It's the LORA missile system being launched in the North Atlantic early on Wednesday. It's a type of weapon that can travel faster and strike further than anything currently in Germany's arsenal. This video was released by Germany's Navy. And this test came just hours after the government in Berlin publicly blamed Russia for an attempted drone attack at Leipzig airport recently. Why is this launch so important? Well, because it's part of a much bigger story. The German government is now preparing a nearly 12 billion euro missile program, according to internal defense documents seen by Politico. And that's significant because for decades, Germany has been reluctant to invest in long-range strike weapons. That position seems to be now changing fast. The German Navy chief, Jan Christian Karg, said in a statement, "Our units can successfully deploy the system and its potential range exceeds anything we've seen before. This test marks a new chapter in deterrence and maritime defense readiness."
Germany did not really acquire such capabilities so far that allowed it to hold strategically important military targets at risk far beyond the immediate battlefield. So this is the one reason Germany is kind of beefing up and closing a capacity or capability gap.
Rearming, rebuilding, working with Israel. In the midst of all of that, though, there's a crisis, and the German people are living in anger. There's a lot of frustration. And this is where the AfD is thriving because of it, and these other parties that won't address it. Alice Weidel, she's the I think she's the leader of the AfD, and she's speaking. I mean, they're a political party. I think in these clips she's in the Reichstag, and there's a lot of people that agree with the AfD, and the rest of Germany, the political class, their solution is, well, try to ban it, try to get rid of them, and that just makes people like the AfD even more. This is a clip. Well, you can just play the three of these clips together from Alice Weidel, the leader of the AfD. This start with clip eight.
Helmut Schmidt, during the first and second oil crises, pushed forward with nuclear power expansion. That's what Helmut Schmidt did. But as we can see, Friedrich Merz is no Helmut Schmidt. Refusing urgently needed reforms threatens Germany's economic survival. Instead, the Chancellor, as he just pointed out, prefers to write letters. He wrote a letter. Big deal. The German economy is suffering under the burden of bureaucracy, crushing taxes and skyrocketing energy prices. But you, Mr. Merz, are abandoning small and medium-sized businesses. Every 20 minutes, a German company goes bankrupt. While you pontificate about world politics, German industry is collapsing. In January, industrial orders plummeted even further. Not a single word from you about that. Volkswagen reports a drop in profits of about half, Daimler Truck by more than a third, Porsche by over 90%. The exodus is in full swing. Manufacturing is seeking salvation in flight. Hundreds of thousands of local skilled workers are leaving our country every year. By the way, those well-paying jobs that brought prosperity and financial security aren't gone. They'll soon be somewhere else. In Hungary, in China, in the US, because German heavyweights are continuing to invest there, just not in Germany. So the critical question is, listen closely, it is, will Germany continue to exist as an industrial nation? Germany has no time and no need for empty phrases and grandiose superpower rhetoric. Germany needs an immediate change, of course. That is what our country needs.
A lot of people agree with her. It sounds a lot like what President Trump says in the United States. And you can see that they want a strong leader. They want these problems solved. But as prophecy indicates, it's not going to be a very democratic solution that we're used to. This strong man, he comes in by flatteries. And there are a lot of things that, again, are not democratic the way we're used to them happening. Mr. Palmer's article, When Will Germany Explode? It's at the front of the Trumpet right now. Goes through some of these things as well. Talks about its place in Bible prophecy. Again, like I mentioned, we have to watch. We have to respond to this warning. We have to wait on God and respond while there's still time in this Key of David program. Mr. Fleury, he says, look, when you see all this building before you, as you do today, you'd better be urgent about learning and going to Bible studies where the Bible is taught and really studying the Bible yourself to understand who and what God is. And he gives even more depth and more of an explanation about what we should be doing when we see these things happening, when we see Germany rising, when we see these events in the United States. I took you 2 or 3 minutes over, but I think this Key of David program is important to play. It's important history. It's important admonition and instruction on how to react to world events and to have faith and to wait on God. So this program, again, it's titled At the End, It Shall Speak. This was from back in the summer of 2021. We'll conclude today's program with that Key of David program. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show, and we will see you again tomorrow.
In this dark world, you can find God. He works miracles for His loyal people. Learn about a double wonder miracle in this end time that reveals where God is working today. Next, on The Key of David with Gerald Fleury.
Greetings, everyone. This world is filled with corruption and violence and all kinds of problems that are really quite frightening at times. And our number one problem of all is that of human survival. So where is God in all of this? Where is He in all this turmoil? Well, the prophet Habakkuk tells us that. And not only that, he tells us that he's going to speak in this end time. He's going to speak to this his very elect and the entire world. He's going to proclaim His message, and you can prove that to yourself. It's not something you you're asked to believe without proving it. We must prove it. But God says that every individual can be walking by faith. That is a real problem. If we don't have faith, where is God? You see, we must know where God is and what He's doing. And if we know where God is, or we don't know where He is, then that's the biggest crisis of all. The very biggest crisis of all. God talks about in this end time that He's going to show us a double wonder, is the way the Hebrew reads, a double wonder from God Himself, and everybody has the opportunity to see it and should see it. That's how critical this is and important it is to God. And yet, most of God's own people don't even believe it, if you can believe that. Now, that's, you see, a crisis of faith. We can really have those crises, and they're the worst of all. The crisis of faith. Notice what it says in Habakkuk 2 and verse 1. It says, I will stand upon my watch. This is a military expression. God's very elect are soldiers for God. So it's a military battle and a war that's going on. And set me upon the tower, and will watch to see what He will say unto me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. Now, Habakkuk was going to God, knowing he might be corrected and reproved. But that's okay. He didn't care. He wanted to know the truth of God. He was humble, and that's humble man as to whom God looks. Isaiah 66, verses 1 and 2 tell you that it's the man that's contrite and trembles at God's word that really is the man God looks to. Habakkuk was such a man. Then in verse 2, and the Eternal answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time. An appointed time. Well, now, that's something we need to keep in mind. But at the end, it shall speak, and not lie, though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Now, the Apostle Paul quoted these last two verses of Habakkuk in the New Testament. And he was talking about faith. And let me quote those scriptures to you in Hebrews 10, verses 37 and 38, says this. And, of course, the book of Hebrews, we prove to you, is specifically for this end time. You can prove that by just reading our Hebrew booklet. Verse 37, for yet a little while, here's the quote from Habakkuk, for yet a little while, and he that shall come and will not tarry. Verse 38, now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. And he's talking about the second coming of Christ. He's not going to tarry. He's going to come. But you have to be patient. And some commentaries will tell you these two verses are a quote from Habakkuk. The two I read to you earlier, verses 3 and 4. Hebrews is mainly for this end time and just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. And that book tells you what Jesus Christ is doing right now, as Habakkuk does in this case. And Paul had a really, I think, masterpiece, his masterpiece, anyhow, when he wrote the book of Hebrews. It is, I believe, his most powerful book of his 14 books that he wrote in the New Testament. So he had a lot to do with canonization of the New Testament. So Paul went on to tell us just explicitly what God is doing right now today. And he wants us to understand that, and he wants us to bring God into our life in this end time especially. Notice Hebrews 10 and verse 25, it says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. That is the second coming. And he's saying, look, when you see all this building before you, as you do today, he said, you'd better be urgent about learning and going to Bible studies where the Bible is taught, and really studying the Bible yourself to understand who and what God is. Verse 3, let me read that to you again in Habakkuk 2 and verse 3. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, a specific time for us today. Precise. The time we live in right now. This is all in the present tense, as I'll show you in a moment. But at the end it shall speak. I want to talk to you about that today. At the end it shall speak. And not lie, though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. So, what does this powerful scripture mean? Well, it means this, and you need to think about this, I believe, very carefully, because if you just, let's say, study the Bible very diligently and pray very fervently, that still is not enough. This scripture here tells us we have to have an open mind to God's new revelation. And there is something you have to be very careful about here. But he says, now if you can actually prove when there is new revelation, you can prove it. But you have to be very careful. Now, this is a monumental truth. What you really must do is make sure you're open to God's new revelation. Your mind is open. And you want to, you're willing to receive it from God, even if you have to be reproved like Habakkuk. So, I can think of like 50 visions in the last 30 years that God has revealed. And I've proven them. And they're right there in your Bible. And you can prove it. Each one of these is addressed to God's very elect and the entire world. God is speaking to this world. He promises to do that. It has to happen. He's going to speak to this world, and he says you individually can help do that and receive a great reward. And you can prove that all of this is of God and from God. God doesn't expect you not to prove it because, well, that's just going to be getting you deceived if you're not proving things. God says in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21, we are to prove all things, all of them, all things. You can look at the biblical Daniel where he talks about interpreting dreams or a vision that Nebuchadnezzar had. Then he talks about the visions and the handwriting on the wall in Daniel 5 and the others in Daniel 2 and chapters 2 and 4. And every time Daniel said he didn't figure this out himself through very hard Bible study and fervent prayer or any, that at all, he said, God revealed these visions to me. He revealed to Nebuchadnezzar what was going to happen, because God revealed it to Daniel, and Daniel makes that very clear. And that whole book is for this end time only. And how many people know that and understand that? You can read that in Daniel 12 verse 4 and verse 9. But now we have Habakkuk talking about something that God is going to speak to his very elect and speak to the world, and you can prove every word of what I'm saying. Look at Jeremiah 17, verse 5. You can't trust any man, but you'd better trust the man that God is using. He does use a man to get this revelation to the world. That's been done throughout history and will always be done that way. And it must come from God, and you must prove that it's coming from God, not from a man. No man can give us guidance and direction about how we should conduct ourselves spiritually. Only God can do that. Let's go back to Habakkuk 1 and read what is happening here in the book of Habakkuk. Very deep trouble inside God's own church, and it's a prophecy for this end time. God is going to speak to us in this end time. Now, do we believe that? This is what the book is saying, and Paul really believed it. He quoted Habakkuk, and he spoke well into the time of the New Testament. Habakkuk 1 and verse 1 says this, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see, it is a burden at times. Verse 2, O Lord, how long shall I cry, and you will not hear, even cry out unto you of violence, and you will not save? So here is a temple crisis that Habakkuk is talking about. But today, God's people are the temple, spiritually. So God is talking to His people. And there's a crisis in God's own church. A very evil man has gotten control of it. And Habakkuk is just saying, well, how long, God, are you going to let this destruction continue? How long are you going to keep us from getting proclaiming your message to the world? Because they even destroyed the work itself, these unrighteous people. Verse 3, why do you show me lawlessness or iniquity and cause me to behold grievance for spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention? So after Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, we saw all kinds of this strife and contention in God's church. And all of this is written in the present tense. Just notice that. See, this is what, when you have it revealed to you, then that's when it's happening. At that very specific time, the appointed time. The word strife is a legal word of lawsuit. And contention means to strive as at law. And there's a lawsuit. The verdict came out perverted. It says that's what those words mean. It's about a lot of lawlessness. And we experienced a 6-year court battle where we had to fight to get Mr. Armstrong's 19 works that we wanted and had to have to proclaim this message to the world. And even though we technically lost the court case, God still forced them to give us what, even more than what we asked for, in a way that is rather complicated. And we have a book that explains all of that, about the raising of the ruins, and we'll send that to you if you'd like a copy of that. But notice Habakkuk 1 and verse 3, it says, there are that raise up strife and contention. He's talking about, according to James Fawcett and Brown commentary, he's speaking of an individual, it says. It's there he that raises up strife and contention. It should read that way. One man inside the church of God is doing all of this damage and even stops the very work of God. And it has to be continued someplace else. And where is that? Verse 4, therefore the law is slacked and judgment does never go forth, for the wicked discompass about the righteous. Therefore wrong judgment proceeds. The Anchor Bible continues by saying that wicked and righteous here also refers to individuals. It's two individuals that are working here. God is using a man to fight against this evil transgression inside God's church led by a man. Now, where is that all happening? See, it talks about the law being slacked and all that. The government is very feeble. When and where did all this happen? A lot of it's happened before the world, and they've seen it and discussed it and talked about it. And you and I need to understand it. It also says in the Sansino commentary, the wicked one literally surrounds, hems in the liberties of the righteous. They just take over and get control. And God has to intervene and stop that so that His word can go out again and we can prophesy again. Revelation 10 and verse 11. Habakkuk 1 and verse 5. Notice this. Here is what God is showing the whole world if they'll just pay attention. To everybody, He's directing this wonderful, wonderful truth. Notice this. Behold, you among the heathen, they're all acting like heathens now, and regard and wonder marvelously. For I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. See, he's talking about his own people becoming like heathens, and he says they're going to wonder marvelously, but if you look at the Hebrew, that means wonder, or a double wonder from God Himself. What is God? What is that double wonder? What is God going to deliver to us? And I'll tell you, there's even a duality here. It's not only talking about God's church, spiritual Israel, but it's talking specifically about two nations of Israel, which really is prophetic Israel. You can understand that by reading the United States and Britain in prophecy, but this is a strong warning, and it is dual, and it goes on to talk about God correcting these nations of Israel, and by raising up the Chaldeans and to possess the dwelling places that are not there, so a lot of trouble is coming if we don't understand this double wonder. It is a solution. It is a solution to these crises we're facing today. Now, let me just go along to verse 5. It talks about that proud man again who is as death. You can read that in verse 5. Habakkuk 2 and verse 5. As death. In other words, this is about eternal life and eternal death. That's what this man is doing, this evil man of sin or son of perdition talked about in 2 Thessalonians 2 in verses 3 and 4. Eternal life is at stake here. And he talks about him in taking what is not his own. Verse 6, what we were fighting for in court was not his, but he just claimed it and said that Herbert Armstrong's works should not even be printed, period. And of course, that in itself is unconstitutional, but nevertheless, that's the battle we had. And then in verse 6 it says, I'll just paraphrase here, this revealed truth comes only from God. You can see that. It's not His. See, this is God's truth. This is God's revelation. It's not about men. It's about God and what He's doing for men, if they will just heed what He's saying. Where is God in all this? Where is the divine truth in all this? God always warns His people when they're getting into dire trouble. He always does that. And He'll always continue to do that. He warns Israel about it because, well, they haven't done their job that God expected them to do. But again, you see that God's very elect are open to new revelation. Of course, this is new revelation, as you find so many times in this end time. And we have to know and be open to that and be willing to be reproved if necessary, just like Habakkuk, or we're never going to have the truth in our minds. We will never be able to walk by faith because we're not doing what God says. Verse 10 talks about He was cutting off many people. He was just sending another message out to the world by using the power that had been provided by Herbert W. Armstrong. But this is treason, if you look at it spiritually or physically. It's treason. And it happened inside God's church. Now, here you have this double wonder in Habakkuk 2 and verse 11. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. Now, that's very complicated. The stone is Jesus Christ. You can read that in Genesis 49 and verse 24. But what is God talking about here? Well, number one, he's talking about a book that explains all these things. And we'll send you a booklet here on Habakkuk that will explain all that to you. But the first part of that double wonder is a book, Mystery of the Ages, which explains and is a synopsis of the entire Bible. And we think very strongly is the second most important book on this earth. It's a double wonder. It's one half of that wonder. What's the other part of it? Well, the other double wonder is a new throne of David. A new throne of David. You mean God is going to show us a new throne of David in this end time? That's the throne that Jesus Christ is going to return to sit on and rule for all eternity. And he's going to let those people who come out and proclaim this message before his second coming sit right there on his throne with him as it's his bride. There will never be a greater opportunity than this if we'll just see what God is offering us. This is all so very, very inspiring. Let me read what I wrote in the New Throne of David. You can get the full understanding of this double wonder in the New Throne of David booklet, and we'll send that to you as well as the booklet on Habakkuk and Hebrews. Here's what I wrote. Habakkuk 2 and verse 11 is the single greatest new revelation that God has given the Philadelphia Church of God so far. It is not just a wonder, it's a double wonder. Let me make it very clear. First wonder, the new throne of David that God has given us. Second, in a six-year court battle, God gave us Mystery of the Ages, the only book on earth that can answer the stone's cry. That book will do it, and you can prove all this. I'm not asking you to believe anything that you can't prove. Habakkuk 3 and verse 2 says, O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known in wrath. Remember mercy. See, we're right in the middle of everything. And there is a crisis in the middle of our work. And we believe you can prove every bit of it. Let me just read Habakkuk 1 and verse 5 again. Behold you among the heathen in regard and wonder marvelously, double wonder, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe though it be told you. See, most of God's people will not believe this. They won't do it. Now, they lack the faith to believe what God is saying. You see, and then that's the reason they're not open to new revelation. It takes faith to step out and believe God. Because God always delivers. And if you look at Galatians 2 and verse 20, it says we can have the very faith of Jesus Christ. The very faith of Jesus Christ. Now, Christ asked the question, or the New Testament does, when Christ returns, shall we find faith? Well, that's a question that only you and I can answer. Until next week, this is Gerald Fleury. Goodbye, friends.